Guys of a Certain Age is brought to you by no one. Absolutely no one. Except these dudes walking down memory lane. Now let's head to the studio to see what they misremember next.
It's the podcast that roars like a lion and a lamb. It's Guys of a Certain Age. Robbie Koblenz in studio alongside
Art Shirley.
I don't know if we truly roar. you and I kind of grumble more than roar. And then there's Jay, who's not with us today.
That's right. Now, it's not because we fired him.
That's right.
After the events of last week.
So, yeah, clarification.
So, Mrs. Reed, he's not here because he couldn't be here and not because we fired him.
I think it's because she grounded him.
Oh, okay.
Oh, maybe we weren't supposed to say that.
That's right.
Were we? So, all right. But anyway, I think Jay may join you when I'm gone.
Yeah.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows what the future will hold?
That sounded like all this will be yours one day.
Son, all this will be yours. Yeah. Whether you want it or not.
That's right.
The burden of the things that you think are great that your kids will want that your kids have no interest whatsoever.
Yeah, no thanks.
No, we're just going to burn it once we bury you, you know, or put it on eBay. Yeah. So anyway, all right, let's jump into some Geeks of the Week. What do you have?
I have a sad geek to report. Louis Gossett Jr., who probably is best known for his role as Chicken George in Roots and the drill sergeant, Sergeant Foley, an officer and a gentleman, passed away March 29th, so a few days ago as we record this. He was 87 years old. He also was the first African-American performer to win Best Supporting Actor, the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for the Sergeant Foley role. Just a brilliant actor. Like I said, loved him in Chicken George. But in terms of geek cred that he's got, he also starred in the movie Enemy Mine. Do you remember that one?
I remember Enemy Mine. Yeah.
It's kind of a lizard-like character who becomes pregnant at some point and and has an egg, I think, lays an egg and has a child. And it's a very interesting story. I need to watch that again. That's that. You know, we had that thing where we were watching old movies. We did Last Starfighter and then just kind of dropped the idea altogether. Our regrettable movie segment.
Yeah.
And but that would be a fun one to watch again.
Yeah.
We do it for the show or just do it.
But anyway, do it for ourselves.
Yeah. So Louis Gossett Jr. passed away at 87.
He was also in the 1989 version of The Punisher.
Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I guess my question was, I'm going to look it up and get his IMDb because he was such a talented actor. He wasn't in The Powers of Matthew Starr, was he?
Oh, I don't know.
Remember The Powers of Matthew Starr?
That was a TV show, right?
It was a TV show.
That sounds kind of familiar.
That was...
Was he in Iron Eagle?
He was in Iron Eagle.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was in over 200...
And he kind of suffered from that Oscar winner thing where you never get a role that,
He voiced...
Although fans of Enemy Mine may dispute that.
Yeah. He was in Stargate SG-1.
Okay.
I'm looking at other stuff. The Dead Zone, which was a TV series there for a second or three.
That's right. Anthony Michael Hall and the Christopher Walken role.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Legend of the Mummy. I do not remember that at all.
I think that's one of those probably direct to video.
1998. Yeah, he did get kind of stuck into some not real good fun movies. So I'm looking him at 1994. He was a voice actor in Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
We ran that on Channel 5 back in the day. He was in Toy Soldiers.
Was he a character in Toy Soldiers or was he an actual actor?
Dean Parker. He was actually acting.
So he wasn't one of the soldiers. Wasn't Tommy Lee Jones the main soldier in that?
I believe he was. Yeah.
That's a good movie. I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Yeah.
Or I remember it being a good movie.
King Cobra from Iron. That was an Iron Eagle follow-up.
Yeah, that was a...
Yeah, he was in The Powers of Matthew Starr, which was a TV show from 82 to 83.
Was that on Fox?
No, it was on NBC. This was before Fox.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When did you say it was?
82 to 83.
Okay.
And that's right, because that was right after An Officer and a Gentleman.
Yeah, I was going to say that wasn't too far after his...
Yeah.
His Oscar win.
Yeah, which he goes to The Powers of Matthew Starr. Do you remember that TV show at all?
Yeah, I remember it, but just...
But, so, it's a kid who is a prince. It was Peter Barton. I don't know if he did anything else ever again. He was a prince from another world. They were hiding him on Earth, and he had kind of superpower sort of things. Yeah. And he was a prince on the planet Quadris who was forced to flee to Earth when its planet's government was overthrown by despots.
How many seasons did the Powers of Man?
Dose seasons.
That's uno mas than I thought.
Well, I say it's two seasons. It was 24 episodes, so it may have just... I think it was two split seasons, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, okay.
No, I'm lying. It was one season with 21 episodes. But I remember Lou Gossett Jr. in that.
And it seems like there were a bunch of TV shows that were kind of a similar, you know, they were trying to find a hero show to do.
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously the success of Star Wars, you know, New Hope, Empire.
And Superman, you know, the 78 Superman.
And so all of a sudden it became, hey, let's do some sci-fi tingy sort of thing. And
right. Some things worked and some things didn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Powers of Matthew Starr.
How did they get Louis Gossett Jr. for that?
Probably they signed him when he was in the middle of shooting Officer and the Gentleman.
That's probably what it was. Because of the timeline. Yeah. That's probably exactly what it was. And he's going, great.
Yeah. No wonder, can I renegotiate my rate based upon I have Oscar that I'm bringing something, some credibility to this TV show that otherwise
And don't you know, starring Oscar-winning actor Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway, and talented artist. So, long list. I'm pulling up my stuff as I went for my IMDb. Geek stuff. So, speaking of Punisher, Lou Gossett Jr. was in.
Was that the Thomas Jane Punisher? Who was?
I think it was the Dolph Lundgren. There have been set pictures from Daredevil Born Again that show John Berthenthal as the Punisher. Okay. So
I never did watch that one.
I didn't either. I need to go back and...
Is it still on Netflix?
Yeah. Okay. Well, no.
It's on Disney.
It's all Disney. All this stuff went to Disney.
All Disney all the time.
So it has been made canon. All those series have been made canon.
All of them have.
All of them.
Even Luke Cage.
Good,
because that was one of my favorite ones.
And Iron Fist.
Iron Fist 2?
Yeah.
Wow.
So the guy who played Iron Fist, I can't remember his name, on his Instagram feed this week, he threw up a picture of a Luke Cage Iron Fist comic book.
Oh, wow. With them in it?
From way back.
So hoping to generate some interest in that? Or?
Speculation he might make a cameo.
Okay.
So Kristen Ritter, who played Jessica Jones. You know, she had done something similar a few months ago where she had her purple shirt on or whatever it was that was kind of her costume for the Netflix. She's like, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
So it would be great to see those guys. And there's speculation it may run into a Heroes for Hire type of series next.
That was the comic book with Luke Cage and Iron Fist. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which could be like a Junior B Avengers team.
Or Defenders, I guess.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
that'd be cool.
It would be really cool. So, but
and the thing is, you could bring in, you know, if they're canon now, and you could bring in some folks that kind of might fit into that world from the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
So we'll see who that is.
Yeah, it would be fun to see what they do. Mm-hmm. Speculation now: are they going to go back and incorporate Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. into canon?
Oh wow! Okay.
Which, did you ever finish watching Agents?
Yeah, I watched all of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
So I did not get to the time jump. I need to go back and rewatch and get the time jump and the whole
thing. It gets complicated.
Yeah.
You know?
Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly.
Yeah, yeah. So. But I enjoyed the whole run. I mean, some seasons were better than others. But,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But in general, I thought it was
good. It's a shame that it's been kind of abandoned as it has.
Yeah.
You know?
Same thing with the Agent Carter miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. But. Even more so with the Agent Carter because, I mean, it's a short series. It absolutely fit in the timeline because they didn't. With Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they had to do some things to shoehorn, you know, plot lines in between movies, you know, Agent Carter was able to kind of exist outside of that because of where it existed after the events of the first Captain America.
Very much self-contained. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I forget the guy who played Jarvis in Agent Carter.
Oh, yeah. He was good.
He was great.
Uh-huh.
He is in the Apple TV Plus Constellation series.
Oh, yeah.
It's about to wrap up. Have you watched any of that?
No, and I need to watch that.
It's I've kind of stalled out a little bit on it.
Oh, really?
I need to finish it.
Okay.
It's good. It's mm-hmm. good. It's not quite Silo good.
Yeah, okay.
But better than what was the other show that you guys started watching?
Foundation?
No.
You like Foundation.
I like Foundation. Yeah. It had Sam Neill.
Oh yeah. Invasion?
Invasion or whatever.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that I couldn't get past. Foundation, I did like Foundation better than Invasion. Was like a non-starter for me. I watched one episode and go, no, this just isn't working. And it may be okay, and maybe I need to go back and see it.
I finished the two seasons, and I don't know that I'll revisit.
But the Constellation looked good to me. I need to go. And so how many episodes is that going to be?
Eight, okay. Maybe?
Have they all pretty much released?
I think they've dropped at this point. Okay. So, because I think I'm on five.
Mm-hmm.
Have you started watching Three Body?
We started Three Body Problem, got a few minutes into it, and decided we would wait until after we finished. We have a couple of the series and said, let's wait because I think this is going to require more attention.
Yeah.
You know, so we're finishing Shogun. Well, I guess we've got several episodes of that left, but we'll probably finish that first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you've enjoyed Shogun.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah. I need to watch it.
Yeah. And Becky started Palm Royale.
Isn't that a dishwashing liquid?
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Which one is that?
It's a Kristen Wiig thing set back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched an episode with her last night, and it was okay. It was good. I mean, it was actually pretty enjoyable. But
yeah.
So she's watching that.
Yeah, you need to watch Constellation instead of Palm Royale.
Yeah, maybe I'll watch that while she's doing that.
It's what they call a dishwashing liquid in Paris, Palm Royale.
Palm Royale.
A Royale with cheese. So anyway, I've got something else I'm going to bring up since we don't have a regrettable segment. Oh, excuse me, we don't have
Jay's regrettable segment brought to you by Palm Royale. The dishwashing liquid from the 60s.
That's right.
That
that's right.
Just discovered.
So it looks like DC Comics is leaning into the what if sort of Marvel, let's take alternate timelines. Did you see this? They so back in December, we missed it entirely. They did a reissue of, what was it, Batman 428?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Where Jason Todd's killed.
Uh-huh.
And so they reissued 428.
I did see that, yeah.
With Jason Todd living.
Right. They used it because they had, you know, they had drawn, I think from what I understand, Jim Aparo had drawn both endings.
Yeah.
You know, because they were, you know, it came down to the phone call.
Did you call in to?
No, I don't remember that. I think I was probably, that hit when I was, you know, kind of between comic book stuff. So between high school, what year was it?
I believe it was 88 or 89.
Yeah. So that's what I'd kind of had a resurgence around the time of Dark Knight, and then, hadn't really looked at anything. Really wasn't looking at anything mainstream around that time.
Well, I think I called in and vote. It was an 800 number, and I think I voted for him to live,
okay,
if I remember correctly. But so what they're doing, they published that back late 23. Mm-hmm. They're doing a Robin Lives miniseries. So they're doing a
in
four issue. Yeah, in the comics. And so it's going to be his rehab, recovering from almost dying, and what he does to go after the Joker.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. So what are they calling it? They're calling it DC Vault.
DC Vault.
Yeah, okay. Death in the Family, Robin Lives. So, you know, issues 1-4. So it'd be really interesting to see what they do with that.
So, yeah, I think so too.
Because, I mean, Jason Todd becomes the
Red Hood.
The Red Hood.
Yeah.
How is he resurrected in the comics?
I don't remember. I don't remember at all. Like I said, I wasn't reading him at that time. I should know because I've probably seen it.
Yeah.
But I can't remember what happened to him.
So he comes back.
Because, Batman finds him dead.
Yeah.
I mean, he's dead.
He picks him up.
Picks him up and walks off, you know, and so it's like,
nah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I don't know if he goes to Ra's al Ghul's
That's what it is. Is that what he does? It's a Rachel Gould thing. Uh-huh. I think they retrieve his body.
Okay, and put him in the Lazarus pit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the good old Lazarus pit.
Yeah, I tell you what, father-in-laws are meddlesome, yeah, aren't they?
That's right. So, speaking of which, that whole
father-in-law's
series,
meddlesome.
No, the whole Treasury edition of the collection of the Daughter of the Demon story was re-released as a facsimile edition of that.
Interesting.
Which I have the original.
Yeah.
I thought about getting the new one. I don't know if they've recolored it or anything. That's a lot of times what they'll do is kind of use modern coloring techniques.
I've got Son of the Demon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is great.
Uh-huh. I've got that as well.
You know, there's so many Batman pieces out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it used to be that there you could collect all the graphic novels of Batman. And
oh, yeah.
Now there's
no way. Yeah. And all the offshoots, like you said, and the, you know, what is it? Gotham by Gaslight. Yeah. You've got all these different
Elseworlds.
Yeah.
The Gotham by Gaslight is still such a classic.
Yeah, I really like that a lot.
That was really, really good.
I thought
good.
That was really well done.
And at some point, they've got to do a live action version of that.
They've done the animated version. Yeah. But it was good.
It was good.
But I think, you know, it seems to me as technology advances and it's so much easier, relatively speaking, I guess, to produce these things, you know, especially like on for a streaming service, that they could do that. You can get cinematic effects and things with a much lower budget than, yep, you know, even 10 years ago you could.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the AI component as well.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, all right, we're going to throw it to break. We're going to talk technology. We're going to talk software programs and try to be intelligent, at least authentically intelligent. Up next. And we're back. And so this last week as we're recording, two pieces of software that Art and I use have decided to, well, it was a buyout is what it was.
Okay.
So you want to talk a little bit about Canva and Infinity?
I have Canva Designer and Canva Photo. I can't remember.
You have Affinity.
I'm sorry. I have Affinity.
Photo
and Affinity Designer, which is their kind of takeoff on Photoshop and Illustrator. And they've also got, Affinity has a new program called Publisher, which I think is an unfortunate name because Microsoft Publisher is reviled designers everywhere. But anyway, that's their page layout program.
So Affinity came out with these programs a few years ago when Adobe went to a subscription-only service where they were going to basically, I'm not going to say hold you hostage, but
they do in a certain way.
$30 to $50 a month, depending.
Yes. Oh yeah. To subscribe to their creative suite and you pay that, you know, forever and ever.
Forever.
And yeah. And there's no way you can, used to be able to, you know, buy a set of compact disc or maybe they even went to DVDs before they stopped doing it. And have your software. So if you decided, okay, well, I'm never going to upgrade again, you could at least keep that.
Yeah.
Now, as soon as you cancel your subscription, you no longer have access to open those files anymore.
At all.
You have no software that resides on your computer anymore. I mean, no active software.
I used to upgrade basically every other cycle.
That's kind of what we did too.
Yeah,
that's
for Creative Suite is what
Creative
it was called.
Suite. Yeah, now it's Creative Cloud.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I mean, I love Adobe products. I have, you know, for years, for 30 years. And just, you know, I've always enjoyed those. But the Affinity offer, you can usually catch a sale on it and you can get all three pieces of software in a Mac format, a Windows format, and an iOS format. Like right now you can get them for $115.
Yeah.
And you own them. That's yours. Now granted, if they make a, you know, significant upgrade, you'll have to pay an update fee to do that. But even if you don't want to, you don't lose the software.
And it's not unlike what we used to do.
With
the Adobe pieces.
And the Photoshop doppelganger or analog rather will, you know, open and save two PSD files. The Illustrator file will open and save. I think they will do SVG files, but you can get to and from an Illustrator file if you need to. The publisher will not because the INDD is a proprietary format, but you can still save to a PDF, and you can save it to a print-ready PDF, and you can save it. I think you can either open or save to an IDML file, so it means you could either open or save to InDesign files through a roundabout fashion.
Yeah.
But even so, if you don't need the InDesign file. Basically, everything that's being printed or transmitted these days is going to be a PDF of some kind.
Yeah.
So, you know, and you can get to that.
But it just shows that the market has kind of collected itself. And while Adobe is probably the biggest monopoly out there on design and digital video.
Yeah. Because that's true. We need to mention that in the digital video space, including effects with After Effects, you know, the nonlinear editing with.
So Premiere Pro, which is their nonlinear editor, is the 900-pound gorilla. It used to be Final Cut Pro 7, and then Final Cut, Apple did some stupid things. Yeah. And of course,
you also had Avid. You had other types of things. You had, like, Media.
Media 100 is what I started off with.
So there used to be some competition in that space.
And now, basically, you have Premiere Pro, part of the Adobe Creative Suite. Uh-huh. You have Final Cut Pro 10, which is Apple's program, which is not regarded...
It's not beloved by professionals.
No, it's not, because it has some different paradigms. Uh-huh. And they've gotten better, and they've changed a few things, and there are professionals using it. And
But when they went from, was it 7 to whatever, X or 10, I guess 10. It was.
Yeah.
I mean, they completely... And so you lost projects.
Yeah, you did, because the Final Cut 7 files, you cannot open that project in 10.
Yeah.
And they changed the way that, I mean, so a sequence becomes timeline becomes like a project, and they just changed everything because they were trying to, in that Apple way, take a big swing and say, "Hey, we're going to
this is what you should be doing now. Yeah. We know best.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to take you in a different way." The thing was that professionals are entrenched in their methodology. So you had Final Cut 7, which kind of killed itself. Then you had Avid Media Composer, which was a very expensive project.
Yeah,
program.
Uh-huh. I used to use Avid Media Composer when I worked at Mossy Oak.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing, but it always had that clunky, very PC or Windows type interface. It never felt as user friendly or even as just slick as Final Cut Pro did.
Yeah.
And then later Premiere Pro did.
You know, the issue with Media Composer is it was too little too late. They were a one trick pony. It was editorial only. So if you're just putting video together, because the way Media Composer was kind of built out was you would do all your video editing, and then you would send your project off for sound to be done to it, special effects, coloring, all that was done by other people. These are one-off stations. Mm-hmm. And as we've gotten to a point in the industry where you do everything in one program, then Media Composer was behind the eight ball and never really caught up.
Yeah.
And still entrenched in Hollywood, but it's...
But, I mean, you know, you're seeing now. I mean, I can remember when Steven Soderbergh, whatever his name was, he was editing like Ocean's 11 he did on Final Cut Pro.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was 7 at the time.
Well, Everything Everywhere All at Once, which won the Oscar 2 years ago, was edited on Adobe Premiere.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's really, the tools are not quite interchangeable, but what Adobe has done is they've created themselves, they're now Big Brother.
Yes.
If you want to look in 1984 parlance, as we go back to
last week. Yeah.
Yeah. But so folks have come along and tried to pick off segments of their business.
Yeah.
Business Affinity's one of them.
Yeah. But what the big news is.
Yeah. So,
but, is that Canva, but, which is an online layout program, started out by kind of giving you the ability to create social media graphics and some basic flyers. And it has grown into this desktop publishing piece of software. They've bought out the Affinity products. So I can only imagine that they're going for more professional space or trying to get into that space. Yeah. But it is, you know, for amateur designers and even professional designers, you've got to know how to do Canva now. We're doing it a lot at work, because what we'll do is set up templates that are non-designing folks can go in and make changes to. Mm-hmm. And it's a great system. There are some problems with some of the PDFs that are output from Canva, especially if you're trying to do accessibility. But again, they're working towards that. I think with Affinity, they're going to try to work towards that. And it's just over the years that you and I have been in this business, and even before then, we see these paradigm shifts come and go. I mean, there used to be the thing, what's going to be the quark killer? And now if you say that, people go, what is quark?
That's right.
But quark used to own, first of all, it was PageMaker that owned that space.
I
owned
the
desktop publishing space.
And Aldus PageMaker.
Yeah. And then I think Adobe bought that at one point.
No, it was Aldus. Then it was Altus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, PageMaker. Okay. And then Macromedia had it.
Macromedia did have it.
And then Macromedia, which also had Freehand, if you remember Freehand.
Yes, that's right. Freehand, because I know people that still prefer Freehand.
I love Freehand. Yeah. I mean, that's the program. You would either do Illustrator or Freehand. It's Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was, Coke or Pepsi.
Yeah. And then Adobe bought Macromedia primarily for Director. And then they just killed everything and brought, you know.
And I remember taking a class. This is well after college for me. I was, you know, working in Memphis and took a class on PageMaker.
I was working in Memphis.
Actually, I wasn't anywhere close to Bill. But actually, I was working. I was working a block away from Bill. Doesn't matter. Sorry, diversion there. But I ended up taking like a night school class or whatever on PageMaker so I could start to learn. So I could start learning digital editing.
Yeah.
And then it ended up getting the job and moving down to West Point for Brown Foods, where they were a quark shop in terms of page layout. They had Photoshop and Illustrator. That's what everybody had. And we were running, you know, just like, I can't even remember how much megabytes of RAM we had.
Which was a lot.
Megabytes of disk space or whatever.
Yeah.
Running a 2FX. But anyway, Quark kind of owned the space for a long time.
Quark was the
thing. And again, it was the desktop publishing thing.
But Quark was slow to get to the PowerPC architecture, which is what Apple moved to.
Quark did the same thing that we see Adobe is doing now, where they think nobody can touch us.
You know,
we're the as you said, the 800-pound gorilla, and nobody's going to take this space away from us. I remember when I was working at Brian, going to a digital design conference, and a guy said, better than doesn't get you, good enough gets you.
That's right.
Because if something's good enough and the price point is right, people are going to go to that.
That's right.
And Canva is good enough for a lot of people.
One of the things I saw with the Canva Affinity acquisition was the CEO of Affinity said, you know, we have great professional level tool set, but we do not have very good collaboration at all.
Right.
Canva is lacking some professional tools, but has amazing collaboration. Mm-hmm. So, what was Adobe's Canva attempt?
Okay, Adobe has Adobe Express.
Yeah, which is
it's a great program. I mean, you get it free with Creative Suite.
Yeah.
The place where Adobe has screwed up on this is you can import stuff. You can go back and forth between Photoshop and Illustrator and Adobe Express, but you cannot go to InDesign. And that's, to me, if they had done that, they would own that professional. They would own that for professional space, because then you could send that to your amateur folks, your folks that you have to support, and said, use Adobe Express.
Or prosumers.
Prosumers. Yeah, that's exactly who you need. Yeah. So you would say, use this tool instead. It works like Canva. It's got, you know, some more options that you can do, you know, take advantage of. But the biggest thing is we can export this to an InDesign file, and then it could go to your professionals, and they can turn it into a more professional document at that point. That if Adobe would do that, I think they would own the space. I think it's too late at this point.
I think it's too late.
Yeah, it's definitely too late, especially in light of this latest announcement.
Well, Canva is everywhere.
Canva is everywhere. Yeah,
and there's some
right.
great designs on Canva.
There really are. Now, I have heard, and I agree with this statement, Canva doesn't make you a designer any more than a microwave makes you a chef.
That's right.
It's a tool.
It is a tool.
But the thing is, it's got some really good templates.
If I need to knock a social media post out quickly,
yes,
it's got so many templates to start with.
Uh-huh.
The keywording is so in-depth. Mm-hmm. I can find something, take it, I'll modify it a little bit, and boom, there it goes.
Yeah. Schools, churches, our church has a Canva account, and you know, I'll set up a template, and then they're able to, you know, take it and modify it and go with it. And it's just a great tool for that. But again, like you said, the templates that exist in there already are just something. Okay, I'll do this. And then you've got a very, very professional looking piece.
You do. So, Canva and Affinity, they've kind of, it's a warning shot across the bow. Mm-hmm. You know, on the digital video side.
I was going to,
I mean, so DaVinci Resolve has really become the kind of second place video editor in the prosumer world.
It's still free, right?
So you've got a free version, and then you've got the studio version, which is $300, which is a one-time purchase.
One-time fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, $300 for a professional video editing system is nothing.
And it's a little, it's different on the back end than Premiere is.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It has the database component that Media Composer had. Mm-hmm. You have, and Blackmagic Design has done a great job of kind of hiding all that behind the man behind the curtain. But it does everything. And what Grant Petty, who owns Blackmagic Design, has done, he has found software companies that are about to go out of business or they're in bankruptcy,
yeah,
and he buys their assets. Uh-huh. He bought Resolve from DaVinci Systems. He bought Fairlight from Fairlight, which was a Pro Tools competitor early on.
Right, Pro Tools being an audio editing.
Which is owned by Avid.
Yes, right.
And it's the only thing, the Pro Tools infrastructure is the only thing probably keeping Avid profitable at this point.
Oh, I would absolutely agree with that. Yeah.
And so Grant Petty's packed in editorial, your typical editing. He's got your coloring, which that's what Resolve was built to do, was to come in and do a color pass. They bought Fusion, which is sort of like After Effects, but not exactly.
Yes.
It's a node-based compositor.
Uh-huh.
And Fairlight.
Which if you work, if you start to work in Blender, which is the free 3D software, then this node-based thing is where everything is going.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the way Resolve is in the color. You work in nodes. You push everything through a pipeline.
Yeah.
Instead of a layer, you know, you do a node-based.
Right.
And it takes a little get used to.
It's a very different system, but it's extremely powerful once you understand it.
It is. Mm-hmm. And so you've got Fairlight, which is the audio part of it, and then you can export to any format. So all of a sudden, Blackmagic Design has created this professional grade complete suite for $300, or you can get the free version, which I don't think you can output 4K.
Right. There's some limitations to it, but it's a great way to start and learn the thing.
Absolutely.
And then because everything you create in the free version, once you do the paid version,
and then
you have more possibilities with the paid version.
And
$300,
and the only way that you can get video out to a broadcast monitor with Resolve is if you buy a Blackmagic video card.
Uh-huh.
And so it pushes hardware sales as well.
Yeah.
So
it's the loss leader for their hardware.
Yeah,
stuff.
But I mean, I think.
But Blackmagic's got some great hardware.
They do.
Yeah.
They absolutely
do. They're the ones that I think kind of really took advantage. That's the wrong phrasing, but certainly seized the opportunity that COVID brought with everybody started going to live streaming because they had their ATEM Mini, which was a really cool switcher that they still have, and now they've got even more.
We've got like 22 different versions
that's
of it.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
But again, it's this whole thing where Adobe kind of draws a line in the sand and says, we are it, come at us. You know.
And now people are starting to come at them. And they're realizing what's smart is people are finding, you know, little niches and stuff to go after. Okay, we can attack this space. We don't have to go after the whole giant.
Yeah.
They can almost like some kind of snow speeder wrapping a cable around the legs of Adobe's ad. You know, so
that's right. Or going on a trench run.
Use the force.
Yeah.
Affinity.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what they've done. So it's going to be real interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
And then you add the AI component in. I fly out in a week and a half to NAB.
So oh my gosh.
I'm really curious.
That was coming up.
Yeah. So I'm really curious what the AI component that's going to be bundled into everything, which, I mean, AI, come on. We've had machine learning in software for 10 years at least.
Again,
it's the same thing.
And it's a tool. I mean, as an artist, I certainly don't want, you know, I understand what people are saying when you don't want your artwork to be pulled and used in something, you know, with a copyright violation. But the idea of being able to generate ideas, if nothing else, quickly through AI is just an amazing tool. And a lot of these things, Canva has an an AI component. Yeah. Adobe's putting AI components, they call Sensei, into all the stuff that they're doing. So that's you know, if you don't want to work in AI, it's probably time to find another line of work. But
you should become Amish.
Yeah, that's right, because it's going to be everywhere.
It is.
Yeah.
It,
In fact, this whole podcast has been generated by.
Well, there's nothing intelligent about this podcast.
Right. It's just artificial.
Yes, artificial. Just artificial.
I have a feeling, and thank you, our listeners, for indulging us in this, because we do this every once in a while, kind of do a tech geek out. I think we had every bit as much participation from Jay. And that's no offense, but just had he been here, I don't know that he would have had much to add to this. But
Mrs. Reed, I did not say that. Art said that.
I didn't say anything offensive about it. I just said this is kind of the thing that you and I go off every once in a while. Yeah. Maybe the listenership drops at this point, but it's down really a fascinating thing. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the future.
Well, and then the macro trends in technology are always fascinating. The Justice Department has sued Apple, mm-hmm. claiming that its iOS App Store is a walled garden and monopolistic, and which I find really hard to.
They go after Apple every couple of years.
They really do. I mean, you can go buy an Android phone, and
you're not locked into buying an Apple device.
No, you're not. You're not at all.
Yeah.
So, but we'll see what happens there.
But the one thing is, all this technology, all these things will eventually, speaking of your phones, will eventually affect things that you do on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, you have iMovie, which was, first of all, came out as a little brother to Final Cut Pro on the desktop machines. And now you can edit, you know, movies on your iOS device.
Well, let me tell you what I saw as we're flying back. Now, I guess we're flying up to Chicago. Yeah, Bonnie and I were in Chicago this weekend. Mm-hmm. As we're flying up Sunday afternoon, there is a crew member. She was not actively flying, but she was in we were flying United. She was in a United crew member. So she was a co-pilot. She was a pilot. And she was sitting the row in front of me to the right, kind of catty corner for me in the aisle. And I noticed she was doing active photo retouch on her phone.
Wow.
And it was crazy. And so, not that I'm like trying to stare, but I was just fascinated by what she was doing. She had this picture of her and some friends, and she came in using different tools on her phone.
Right.
And eliminated maybe some discoloration on the face.
It's much more than just adjusting brightness and contrast.
It was crazy what she was doing.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, wow, this is where we are.
Yeah,
where anybody could do this on their phone. So,
there's a liberation that allows everybody to do, again, as we were talking about with the technology and the possibility of making movies. Now everyone has that opportunity, or most people do have that opportunity.
Unfortunately, there's not anything out there to make you or I look better.
Yeah, that's true.
So, all right, that does it for us this week. We'll see you next time around.